I recommend everyone to avoid fragrance. And number one reason for that is a lot of the fragrance are actually a big component in fragrance is phthalates. So as we mentioned, phthalates is also another hormone disrupting chemical. It's in plastic, it disrupts the hormones. The latest research have shown phthalates could be the culprit for reducing sperm quality.
But do you want to evoke fear?
Fear is something that can be helpful sometimes. It's like a double-edged sword. If you have fear, it can promote healthy behaviors.
Right.
So when you fear that you're going to get sick, maybe you'll eat better, mm-hmm. maybe you'll use better product. But at the same time, you don't want to have too much fear, you just give up. Okay, if you want people to reduce their own toxic exposures, do you use a silicone or not? So silicone is actually better for human health, but it's not exactly great for the planet. But silicone can also last a lot longer. So oftentimes you also face these decisions that you have to make.
But if you had to highlight the top five things individuals should steer clear of to minimize their toxic exposure, what would they be? And why are those particularly concerning?
Okay.
Our next guest on the show today is Jenna Hua. She has an extensive experience as an academic and health advocate, which led her to finding Million Marker in 2019. They basically test all the markers in your system of toxic chemicals, you know, even things like parasites, and help you break it down in a more layman's terms so you can digest and you can truly understand what products are out there, what chemicals are out there that are disrupting your way of life, hormone disruptors, just to name a few. And one of her recent publications that she's going to mention more is that they used machine learning to identify people based on food consumed in order to offer healthier food options. She says something that's so staggering, so alarming. You guys totally want to tune in for that part. And I can't wait to share it with you. Jenna, here we are, back at it again. I'm so, like, so, so happy that you're here. I'm so happy that I'm here.
I'm honored that you're here and then coming all the way from Santa Barbara to interview.
I was just talking to you off camera about some just lifestyle things that we're going through, right? Tests that we have had done recently, me being super lectin sensitive. That's for another show, folks. And also celiac, gluten, that whole topic. And then that spiraled into the way that our wheat is being produced, right? With the glyphosate being poured everywhere and it's going into the air, into our water systems. So in your experience, you've been an educator. You've been known as an, yes, okay. You've been an educator. But what role does education play in promoting this toxic-free lifestyle, particularly even among children? Because we were talking about how you're about to have a child come into your life.
I think education is really, really important because once you learn it, you cannot unlearn it. Mm. Unless you have the knowledge, you can't act on it. I think one of the biggest issues, the sort of environmental crisis that we're facing, a lot of people are not aware. Mm-hmm. So for example, like, you know, we often tell people, don't microwave plastic.
Why?
Why is that? Right?
Why?
A lot of people don't understand. It's because the heat from microwaving actually releases a lot of plastic chemicals into that food that comes in contact with the plastic. That's why we don't want to microwave anything in plastic. But a lot of people are not aware. Like,
true.
A lot of people are not aware why plastic is bad. A lot of people are not aware that the temperature actually increases the releasing of these chemicals into your food. So that's why, like, people need to know this information. And once they equipped with this information, then they can act on it and protect themselves.
Right, right. So how can parents, educators, and all the above effectively impart that knowledge and habits to support the lifestyle, right? Don't microwave the plastic. Take it out. How can they, like, really dive in deep to doing that besides just saying, don't do this, do that? right? Because the kids are not going to listen. Take a shower. All right. Okay. You know, it's going to happen to you. Trust me.
Well, the first thing is listen to your podcast, right? And then watch this show. So first of all, is you have to have that information. And then the second, oftentimes it takes, you know, it takes multiple hammering for this information to like sinking, and then you think about it. But you first have to learn that. Then the next time, say you go shop, or next time you're ready to put this microwavable plastic container into the microwave, and then bang, you ring a bell. And then you realize, okay, I probably should not do this because it's bad for my health. So it might take a little while for people to get there, but first you have to know that information.
So, but how do they know, like a parent, right? Sometimes parents, I was talking to a parent just yesterday, and she was asking me, what do I do? I said, I'm a toxic-free lifestyle advisor. Oh my gosh, I have been trying to find a water bottle that's safe for my little girl to drink out of. How do you find this education? Like, how do you find the knowledge, the actual backed up science or research that is truly, you know, reputable, you know, that we can truly believe instead of just fear mongering all around?
Here's a plug-in for Million Marker for anyone who don't know. Mm-hmm. We actually have a website, and that's actually my company called Million Marker. One of the goals for the company is actually provide this education to the public in a really easily digestible way.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, how do people know and how do we educate people? I think one of the biggest gap is the science translation.
Science translation.
So we literally have the science. We literally have these materials. We've been studying chemicals. We've been studying environmental exposures and impact literally for decades. There are a ton of paper. If you look at Google Scholar or PubMed, you will find a lot of literature, whether it's animal models or human epidemiological study. You'll find a ton of evidence showing why people need to care and then how much impact these chemicals could have on our body. But the public don't know. And I think the gap is we don't have this science translation. How do you draw information from scientific literature, from science, to actually inform the public on actionable steps? What can they take to protect themselves from these exposures? So that's part of the goal for Million Marker, is to actually translate this information in really easily digestible ways, like eighth grade reading levels, so people right. can understand. Maybe we'll put bullet points, so you can just simply read the bullet points and understand. And I think there's also more and more tools coming out that people can use, apps that you can download and always go to, you know, other websites to get this information.
So what did you say? Science translation? So, okay, let's give an example here, because we're talking about layman's terms, and a lot of people, especially that might be even tuning in here, like me, myself, I've never even, this may sound silly, but I find myself, I think I'm pretty like well-versed and intelligent. Science translation, is that almost like when you even go to like Wikipedia and you're like, oh, I don't know what this means. It's talking about like chemical compounds and all of that. But it's basically saying like, if you eat this, if you do this, you will feel like this. You will get X, cancer, whatever it is. Truth?
I guess similar. I think another part of science translation is be able to describe the uncertainties. And also kind of describe why, like the reason why you need to do these things and not being so fear-mongering. So there's like a little bit balance there.
Right. And I'm sure we'll get more into Million Marker, because I really want to dive into like the specifics of that. So remember to bring me back to that. But I'm still hooked on, you know, the microwaving of plastics. That's something I feel like that always hooks in my head. When I think of microwaving plastics, I think of, okay, you put the Tupperware in the microwave and then all of a sudden it melts and your spaghetti goes everywhere. And then it's like that paper towel commercial and they're like, don't worry about it, we'll clean it up, right? And then you're like, no, I'm like consuming something that has like bleach on it too, like toxic bleached paper towels. But if you had to highlight The top five things individuals should steer clear of to minimize their toxic exposure, what would they be? And why are those particularly concerning?
Okay. So number one is to avoid plastic as much as possible.
Okay.
So plastic sometimes can be made of over 1,000 or even more toxic chemicals. So
one piece of plastic.
One piece of plastic, yes. And two of the major plasticizer chemicals are BPA and phthalates. So people might have seen BPA-free water bottle, BPA-free cans, and a lot of people don't understand why they even need to care about BPA. They knew BPA is bad because they see BPA-free label. So BPA is a hormone-disrupting chemical similar as phthalates, disrupts hormones and impact from your metabolism to your fertility, everything. So, and BPA and phthalate could be made of up to 80% of the weight in plastic. So it's there could be a ton of them in plastic.
So they're like the devilish dynamic duo.
It could say that, but there are many other harmful ones that people might also have heard about, PFAS, the forever chemicals.
PFAS.
So that could be in plastic too. So it's just a ton of them. So you want to eliminate your exposure. But we have this like really complicated relationship with plastic, right? You can't completely get rid of it. Plastic can be life-saving. You know, if you go to a medical facility, you need to get surgery. These things are made of plastic. So right. In that case, you can't change it, right? But for your daily life, you want to reduce your exposure as much as possible, especially when you are thinking about trying to get pregnant, staying pregnant, or if you have young kids, eliminating exposure would be really, really important because early exposure really matters. So the younger you get exposed to, the more impact you could have.
Over time?
Over time too. So not just transient, but actually over time. And these things accumulate too. So even though your body have the natural detox system to get rid of them, but the issue is that you get repeated exposure day in and day out, and then something, it just compounded a stain. So for BPA and phthalates, we call these transient chemicals. So usually if you eliminate exposure, you will get rid of them within 24 to 48 hours, but not PFAS, not these forever chemicals. Once you get exposed to, it stays in your body for a long time.
Hold on. Limit exposure. So what are we supposed to do, Jenna? Like, I have this image of us being like, nope, can't even like live in my bubble because my bubble's made of plastic. Or you know what I mean? Like, I think of Bubble Boy. How do you limit truly besides just like keeping it out of the home? But it's around you on a daily basis, you know, hot plastic in the sun. Fumes coming up around you. Your neighbor has fucking plastic grass. You know what I mean? What do you do?
Well, that's why I'm saying we have this complicated relationship with plastic, right? There are things you can't get rid of, but you need to make sure that what you have handle of what you can do, you eliminate that. So for example, in your kitchen, you don't want a plastic Tupperware. Change it to glass. That's easy, right? And even if you think about economical reasons, like plastic Tupperware, like they don't last that long. Mm-hmm. But if you change to glass, you can use it for years and years. So that's number one, right? Think about your Saran wrap. That's plastic. Mm-hmm. I see people put a Saran wrap on their bowl and then put it in the microwave.
Kids.
Okay, not great. So you can change that Saran wrap to a beeswax wrap, which you can use it multiple times and you can simply wash it or use a ceramic plate to put on your bowl and put it in the microwave, right?
Some people have the ick factor of reusing things like beeswax wrap. You know who I'm talking to. I'm serious. But why are people reluctant to reuse those type of items? Given that they would know that it would be better for their health over time.
I think oftentimes it's like convenience, right? People want convenient stuff. And this kind of brings me to a topic, you know, sandwich bags, Ziploc bag, that's plastic, right? Mm. So if you can use a beeswax wrap or you can use a silicone bag. However, silicone is like the other thing, right? There's a lot of argument about silicone because silicone is not biodegradable. In terms of health, silicone is definitely safer than plastic, but to the environment, silicone is actually not the perfect choice. Mm-hmm. But then this also comes in like, okay, if you want people to reduce their own toxic exposures, do you use the silicone or not? So silicone is actually better for human health, but it's not exactly great for the planet. But silicone can also last a lot longer. So oftentimes you also face these decisions that you have to make, right? So you just choose the next best alternative for you.
For you, right? It's that baby steps. Like, what do you use the most of in your life, and how can you improve upon that? I have a quick question about the plastic bags. So what about the compost, the green compost ones? Oh my God, please don't. I'm doing my best, Okay.
Okay, I think those are better than the regular plastic bags. But the issue is it really compostable? That's the question. And there's a lot of debate in terms of these, you know, greener alternative plastics. So these greener plastic, while yes, they are greener, they'll probably use a different alternative process. But the issue is that when it's called biodegradable, what does that mean? Does it mean like it's biodegradable under certain conditions, or it's like compostable, or like under what condition is biodegradable? Technically speaking, everything could be biodegradable. It's just like, how long does it take? So oftentimes people like get confused about these things, right? And also there's another fundamental issue is that we don't really have a good enough recycling system. No. So if you have these special plastic, yes, they're good. In terms of their composition, they might have lower toxins and everything. But when it gets to the recycling system, when you throw it into trash, like we don't really have a good way to collect those and then put them under special conditions and then get them composted or biodegraded. That's a problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. Real life example, our farmer's market. Okay. They used to have this, we bring your compost here, we put it in our bin. Great, you know, we take it for you. It lasted, I feel like, for a week. And then they're like, oh no, don't worry. Like, we'll just separate it from your trash. I'm like, really? You'll go in my trash can and you will separate my compost. So I'm doing my best and I'm actually trying to put it in a compost bag in the trash bin, thinking, yeah, they're still taking it out because it's in a compost bag. I hope God like is with me on that. But yeah, the system, like, are people really putting forth the effort to following the recycling rules, you know, better for the environment, which then, you know, leach out those toxins into the universe. So we're still on number one, BPAs and phthalates.
Yeah, we diverge a little bit. Yes. So number one is try to get rid of plastic as much as possible in your life. And then I think the second one is become a more conscious consumer, right? Like for your personal care products as well as your household products, avoid fragrance.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's like a really simple rule that people should follow. Okay, plastic number one, and the second is avoid fragrance as much as possible. So fragrance is this term that, again, similar like plastic, it could be over 3,000 something chemicals, and it's never disclosed upon the brands or the manufacturer what's exactly in their fragrance. I think there are more policies coming out that asking manufacturers to disclose that information. California has one asking manufacturers brands to submit that information, so at least there's some transparency. But in terms of that label, you still don't know. So I recommend everyone to avoid fragrance. And number one reason for that is a lot of the fragrance are actually a big component in fragrance is phthalates. So as we mentioned, phthalates is also another hormone disrupting chemical. It's in plastic, it disrupts the hormones. The latest research have shown phthalates could be the culprit for reducing sperm quality.
Okay, hold on, pause. Phthalates, reduce sperm quality, hormone disruptors, you put it on all the time, right? Fragrances. I have so many questions, but I want to pause you still. Hormone disruptors, especially amongst women. Let's focus on women first. Young women too. All the girls want to be cool with, this is a cool scent that's in, or this is the deodorant I use, or whatever the scent is, or we're so conditioned to think, something smells bad, we must cover up that scent. Any part of us, right? You know, hair care, body care. So when you talk about hormone disruption, especially amongst young women, what should they be looking out for? Like, how can you tell a teenager, you should not be spraying on that cologne? You know, like, do you want to evoke fear?
I think fear is something that can be helpful sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again, it's like a double-edged sword, right? Like, so if you have fear, it can promote healthy behaviors.
Right.
So when you fear that you're going to get sick, you're going to, maybe you'll eat better. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll use better product. But at the same time, you don't want to have too much fear. You just give up.
Right.
That's sort of a fine balance when you ask people to change their, especially like these lifestyle behaviors, right? So you don't want people to be super stressed out and then they just give up. They would just think that, okay, everything around me is toxic. I'm just not going to care.
Right.
You want to promote enough fear that you're like thinking about, okay, I want to eliminate these exposures so that I don't get sick in the future.
Mm. Yeah, but okay. So with that being said, going back to men and sperm count, start talking about that with fragrances.
So phthalates is a chemical.
Or phthalates.
Phthalates is a chemical that actually can block testosterone, and then we know how important testosterone is.
So, what would be a common example? And then go back to that. What would be a common example that men would use that phthalates would be most found in?
Cologne would be like a number one, right? But it could be in any personal care product. Again, like phthalates is like makes that fragrance stick on you for a much longer term. And that's only one of the phthalates. Phthalates have many different kinds of phthalates. This type of phthalates that put in fragrance, we call them low molecular weight phthalates. But there's another category called high molecular weight phthalates, and those are generally used in plastic. That's actually make plastic really flexible.
So would that be more of like a hair gel? Because that's like a plasticky wax.
It could be. Sometimes low molecular weight phthalates and high molecular weight phthalates, they can be used at the same time. So for high, sometimes it's even using like gloves,
okay.
Rubber gloves, making that glove flexible. And if you think about it, one of the strategy which we can talk about later, is eat at home and then eat out less.
Eat at home and eat out less.
One of the biggest reasons for not eating out is that many fast food restaurants, even for, you know, fine dining restaurant, many times, chefs or restaurant workers use glove to prepare that food.
Mm.
There's no regulation whatsoever in that glove. And that glove could also, think about that flexible plastic, the PVC that could be using. You know, think about someone preparing your food, right? They're like, for food safety concerns, and then it's always like for food safety, we want workers to wear gloves and prepare your food.
Right.
But basically, when they're preparing that food, if that glove is like pretty bad and made of like PVC or like phthalates with this flexible plastic, basically everything will leach into your food.
Everything will leach into your food.
Yes. Not just that. I mean, this is also like an issue for restaurant workers too, because they're wearing that glove and then they're touching it all the time. It's also not safe for them.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we don't have that regulation, right? So that for you, not even thinking about the restaurant workers, like for you to go eat and then you basically, you have no control. So we want people to eat at home. So you, when you're preparing your food, not only it could be cheaper, you have full control over the sources of your food and also how you prepare that food.
Truth. So not to overwhelm anyone, but to kind of step back on that, we have to kind of be graceful with ourselves and knowing that, you know, even if you try to control everything and be perfect, that's still a toxic habit, right? Because it's going to mm-hmm. destroy your mind. You can do the best that you can do with the knowledge that you have. But as you said before, once you learn something, you cannot unlearn it. Once you see something, you cannot unsee it. So jumping back to fragrances specifically, I know I'm a non-fragrance fan. Ever since I have had mold toxicity, I am so chemically sensitive. I can smell someone's laundry detergent a mile away. And I was just like, I can smell if someone's washing their hair. Like, you know, and the other were like, I can't deal with this. I feel like I'm suffocating. So with that being said, what are some other terms that are used as fragrance? Because I know it's probably hidden as something else instead of just saying added fragrances.
Yeah, this is really interesting because manufacturers start using, you know, terms like aroma. Oh. Aroma is a fragrance. And another thing that people often don't think about is when you tell folks to go fragrance-free, sometimes people think fragrance is a scent when they go with no scent. Like, no scent is actually a scent. So that's not a name like fragrance-free. So you should look for
unscented?
Fragrance-free. Unscented is actually a scent.
Holy fuck. I'm going to tear apart the house tomorrow. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, unscented is actually a scent. It's a proper scent that's called unscented. So you should always go with fragrance-free rather than like unscented.
Oh my gosh, that is a really good hot tip. Any others? I'm like,
so there's another category. I think it's a bit controversial. Is a lot of supposed to be green products and uses essential oil. So I'm not saying essential oil is bad. Essential oil obviously have like thousands of years of history that people have used it for good. The issue is that we have no idea like the supply chain of essential oil. Unless you know, it's really hard to say. So if you think about it, how is that essential oil, how is that plant being harvested? How is that essential oil be distilled and extracted? If that essential oil is being extracted using plastic equipment, under that hot temperature, even though this plant is good, this essential oil is good, but during that process, all your plasticizer chemical is basically leaching into that essential oil. And essential oil is extremely concentrated.
Right.
That's what's really scary. Because they're really concentrated, that means they also concentrate all these toxins during that process. Then you end up using it thinking this is a natural fragrance. So unless you really know the source of that essential oil, it's like I would still recommend people don't believe in natural fragrance because you have no idea where that essential oil is coming from.
And they have to know. They have to know where it's from.
Exactly. And also from sort of like general knowledge is that about 50% of the essential oil being used in the market are not even actual plants from plant essential oil. It's a synthetic.
It's like juice from concentrate.
So
right?
It's probably worse than that.
Oh, God. So a cool, fun experience that I had, speaking of essential oils and good aromas, I went to Tuscany last year and I took an herbalism course.
Oh, nice.
And it was awesome because we foraged everything from the fields. I mean, if you know as well as I do, Europe, Italy, no GMOs are allowed. They can't spray everything. Everything's wild. We would take our little baskets out and we would just go and snip along. And then we'd go back to our laboratory and literally we had our little distillery and it was not plastic. It was all the
stainless steel
or even like glass beakers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is so amazing. So that just spurred back an amazing memory that I had. It's really actually easier than what people think that they could, if they wanted to make an essential oil, they have the time and the energy, they can do it themselves. They really can learn it. It's a pretty simple process if you think about it. That's a really good example though, because there's so many multi-level marketing companies that thrive off of their essential oils. And I'm thinking the same thing. Well, like, how is this truly a great product? And when I say great, I mean something that's beneficial for you and doing the good.
Yeah, it's also very individual based. Obviously, some people have a lot of sensitivity to botanicals. That's actually a dilemma I think many dermatologists have over, say, for example, paraben, which is another hormone disrupting chemical that often used in personal care as preservatives. And oftentimes, dermatology will recommend something with paraben because there are many people sensitive to botanicals.
So they recommend a paraben instead?
No, they recommend a product with parabens. So because a lot of botanical can have preservative effects when it's used in personal care products. So that's sort of like a dilemma. But when it comes to like essential oil, people need to think about, okay, do I even have sensitivity? So if you find a good source of, you know, a clean essential oil, use sparingly because it's very concentrated. You don't want to go in like full blown. That could cause sensitivity.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we have BPAs, phthalates, fragrances.
Plastic fragrances.
Oh, plastic.
Yeah. So avoid plastic as much as possible. Buy products fragrance free. I think the third one I would say is use a water filter. Really easy at home. Any filter is better than no filter. Mm-hmm. But use a water filter. The reason for that is our water source oftentimes is very contaminated. So it's the main concern is of more of these forever chemicals that we just talked about. And that could be in our water source. And also depending on where you live, each state actually have different policies in terms of how much is allowed in that water source. And different state is like really different.
Which is the worst state?
I don't remember which one is the worst state, but if you look on EPA website, I think there's a list. I was very shocked. I think the last time I was looking at it, just the variabilities between different states. Some states is like probably like 100 times higher than other states, which is like really scary.
Of how much
PFAS is allowed in your water. So I think it's very important for individual to make sure that whatever you're drinking is safe.
Yeah.
And this also kind of brings back the topic, like oftentimes people don't want to just drink regular water. They want a little bit of flavor. They want a little bit of bubble.
Dude, sex up your water. Do it yourself. Right?
So I think in that case, also pay attention on not drinking like canned carbonated water.
Why not?
Cans, you know, same reason that we just talked about before is even if people see BPA-free cans, that doesn't mean it's other bisphenol-free. So what industry have gone smarter is that since BPA has been banned and then since people become more and more aware of BPA, they started using alternatives. The chemical manufacturer can literally swap a letter, BPA all the way to BPZ or any combination of these, and they could be just as bad as BPA.
The manufacturer can do this.
Yes.
So why are these so, why is BPA specifically, since we're on that topic, in cans? We'll use that example. Why is that so bad? What is it going to do to us? What does it do to the can? What does it do to us over time?
So the reason we even have BPA is so your can is made of, you know, aluminum, and whatever drinks you have there and could interact with that aluminum. So BPA, this plastic barrier in the can, actually can help food last longer and retains the flavor. So it's a pretty magical chemical if you think about it. It's very useful. But the issue is that BPA is a hormone disrupting chemical. And I guess we didn't really talk about like what is hormone disrupting chemical,
yeah.
Like what is hormone? Like your hormone is basically your body signaling molecule. Basically for your body to function, it's like the messenger. You need a messenger. You know, your brain needs to tell like, say your stomach that you're hungry, for example, and or to regulate your blood sugar. To produce egg, to produce sperm.
Right.
All of these requires hormones. And hormone is this messenger, like molecules, like floating around your body doing their thing. The issue is that you only need like a tiny, tiny bit of hormone to send a signal. Like think about like one drop of water in like 25 Olympic size swimming pool. You can't even see it.
Yeah.
Basically, that's how much it requires to cause a downstream impact. And also how hormone work is like your body system is like kind of like a symphony. So it's like a key. You don't want your key to be out of whack, like out of sync. So when hormone disruptor comes in and then you basically your symphony is not playing well, your key is out of sync. And then that causes downstream impact. And BPA is one of these molecules. And when it comes in, it doesn't lock into that key that's sending the signal. And then it causing you having off keys for your symphony.
So off keys result in what?
Off key results, some of the common symptoms, like for ladies, you could have irregular period, for example, that could make your endometriosis worse. If you have endometriosis, will make your PCOS worse, for example. And now these hormone disrupting chemicals, we also found they are obesogens. They're making people fat.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Without even trying. They're like, I'm doing my best because I'm drinking,
yes.
You know, I'm drinking, what's an example? Sparkling water or something instead of.
Yeah, sparkling water without even sugar in it.
Natural flavors is added. We'll get on to that one. But specifically, what does a can do? We'll focus on boys right now. We focus on females a lot with the hormone disruption and infertility. But men, does it do anything else specific, especially young men?
It's the same thing. It's right. Like, for example, men, okay, in terms of BPA, BPA actually mimics estrogen. So if you think about it, both men and women have estrogens and testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So when it makes this imbalance, it does the same thing. So for example, in boys, maybe you could see slower development, or you could see like development of breasts, for example. You could have like many other things, and each individual is like really different.
Oh my gosh. So it disrupts their hormones. So canned products, you said canned drinks, even canned foods.
Same thing.
So even if it says BPA free liner.
I wouldn't trust it.
You wouldn't trust it. So when in doubt, throw it out. When in doubt, just soak the beans.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
or just if you really want to buy, say, a bubble water from the store, buy it with glass bottles.
Glass waters. Great. Perfect. Great to know. Because I'm also know that energy drinks are like on high with teenagers these days.
And they all came in a can.
And they all come in a can. And so then what are they doing to their hormones? Is that why they're going crazy all the time? I mean, seriously, that's something that I think is a really hard conversation that parents need to have with their children. Like, these are, you know, wrecking your hormones. Do you want children when you grow up? Do you want, you know, to have bad cramps, ladies? You know, do you want to have horrible PMS? Do you want to have hair starting to grow on your chin that's like dark and thick? Like, that's PCOS, right? Do you want to have, you said obesogens? Do you want to start gaining unexpected weight that is maybe harming your body and your organs in the end? These are all things that you need to be considered. So is the conversation, parents, like, is it worse to rip off the Band-Aid and say, no, I'm not going to buy you that, or I'm not going to provide it in the house at least? You can't really control your kids at school in the gym room, right?
But I think it's like really important for parents to walk the walk, right? Like, so parents should be doing that for themselves, and then setting up as role models for their kids. And this is why we also think, like, when people start having a like a healthy, low tox lifestyle before they even get pregnant is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about it, if you invested the money and time to change your lifestyle behavior and all your products before you get pregnant, not only you have better sperm quality, better egg quality, also making sure you have a really good internal womb environment for your unborn kid. And then during this process, your kid will go really well. And then when your kid is born, he or she already started it's almost having a head start already with this lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
And then during the growing up process, then they learn all these things and it would just come natural to them.
So can I ask you a question about that, kind of jumping on to that train? But do you believe that, say, the mother and the father were super stressed, which is another great toxin, super stressed, but stress was exacerbated perhaps by the lifestyle of what they were ingesting, the chemicals that were going into their body, which were thus making everything just so combative, right? The stress even more reactive. Thus, you know, the quality of choices that they're making is not so good. And then they're stressed even more. Then their baby comes out with a whole slew of problems. Is that so true?
It's possible.
Yeah,
it's possible. It could be a very vicious cycle that people are stressed and then they use worse product and then everything else kind of falls apart. Right. It can definitely happen. But that's why we wanted people to make small changes, right? And then there's enough research showing once you go out for the first step, like once you like doing the first thing and started changing, and that could influence other healthier lifestyle behaviors.
Right.
Some of the research have shown that, okay, if you start eating better or if you start exercising, you will eat better, you will exercise more. And then one thing leads to another.
Totally.
And if you actually start having a low tox lifestyle, that could also influence many things. Because some of the fundamental thing we just talked about, right? Say, for example, eat out less, eat less packaged food. Okay, not only that reduces your toxic chemical exposure, you're also eating better. Your nutrition is better. So another one that we often talked about, okay, if you want to detox, another great strategy is to exercise more by sweating.
Mm-hmm.
So if you exercise more, sweat out the toxins, at the same time, you also, you know, build muscles and then, you know, doing cardio and increase your heart rate. All of these things are also beneficial for generally contribute to your healthy lifestyle.
Oh my gosh, that was so beautifully said. But being the example is like key. And you know, some parents don't know the education, right? So as long as they learn a little bit or trial and error things, you know, what works, kids will see that. You don't necessarily always have to tell them things, mm-hmm. explain things to them, but education for them is very observant,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that's beautifully said. So what's another?
So we talked about plastic, we talked about fragrance, we talked about water. I think the next thing is read labels.
Read labels.
I think that's, I mean, so, that requires a little bit of learning, but I think that could be really, really useful for parents or for kids, especially when you go shopping. Don't be fooled by the front of the label to actually flip it over or look at the ingredients, right? We talked about go fragrance free. And again, when you flip over that label, if you see fragrance, was something you talked about, natural flavor, right? Like, ugh. If you see that, and then so to avoid that product is really important.
What does natural flavor even mean?
Natural flavor is, again, it's this term kind of like fragrance. It could be anything.
Anything? Okay, name some examples.
It could be a flavor that's synthetic, that's mimicking the regular flavor, but then completely made of harmful chemicals.
Created in a lab.
Created in a lab.
In a petri dish.
That could, yeah, well be. And many of them were, it basically could just be anything. It could be genetic modified. It could be many things. So you just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no transparency in this term.
Okay. So going back to actually flipping the product over, not looking at the pretty label that you read, the marketing label, which is so deceiving, but the label that we all know so well that we look at the back and the first thing we look at is what?
I would say that first thing you should look at is making sure it's fragrance-free. Like, it does not have fragrance. It's literally just going to spell out fragrance.
So we're talking about product still.
Yes, we're okay. Talking about product still. That would be like the number one things I would look. And then you can also look for symbols. Like we talked about parabens, right? So sometimes in the front label, it will say phthalates-free. But when you flip it over, sometimes it will still have other chemicals like paraben, for example. And also not all parabens are created equal. So one area we saw a lot of people haven't found the really good choices is these over-the-counter creams, ointment. So for example, hydrocortisol cream. Many people use it for rash, skin rash, mm-hmm. and other conditions. And almost like 90% or more like hydrocortisol cream that we have seen in a store all have parabens because it's a preservative that's used. But when you flip over that label, sometimes it will actually say what kind of paraben that is. So there are four different kinds of parabens, like methyl, ethyl, propyl, and butyl, and they increase in toxicity. So if you have two products side by side, if you know how to read that label, one label is saying, okay, this has, you needed this hydroconazole cream. One label is saying you have methyl paraben, another label you have butyl, then choose the methyl rather than the butyl because butyl is way more toxic.
Butyl reminds me of like butane.
It's just like a longer chain of the carbon chain. So it's longer, it's more toxic.
Because usually like when people just flip over the label, they're like, how many calories does it have? Does it have sugar, right? But the other,
that's also important.
That's also important. Yes. But, yeah, like the marketing and this deception of like how things are labeled. And then also remember to look at like added ingredients or other ingredients. Why is that so important?
Yeah. Other ingredients or inactive ingredients oftentimes, is really important, especially when it comes to supplement. I know a lot of people likes to supplement and I'm not saying supplement is bad. I supplement too.
I know.
And, but it's really important to look at that inactive ingredient label for supplement, particularly if the supplement is made of a capsule. Because we have seen phthalates has been putting capsules to actually make that the supplement or medicine capsule. So when you look for supplement, making sure that capsule is made of vegetarian cellulose. So it's a vegetarian capsule. So then that means it's not a phthalates. It's not made of phthalates. And also it's really good if you're taking, say, a life-saving drug.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole different story that we, if people are taking a life-saving drug that contains phthalates, we can't tell people to stop taking that medication. But you can always, if you're equipped with this knowledge, you can always ask your doctor if there's any alternative. So usually for medicine, if you see slow release or timed release, oftentimes it could have phthalates in it. So it basically helps to prevent the pill from dissolving, say, your strong stomach acid. So once it gets into your intestine and then gets released, or wherever that location it needs to be. So oftentimes it's there for a reason.
It's preserving,
right. But you can always ask your doctor, is there an option that's not slow release that I can take?
You can always ask for another option.
Yes.
That is your...
Like, you can always ask. But you have to know what to ask, right?
Okay. What's the next one?
Let's see. So we talked about plastic. We talked about fragrance. We talked about water filter. Filter your water. And then we talked about reading labels. I think the last one is eat out less, eat at home.
Yes. We talked about
a little bit about it
already. With the plastics. But what are some more diving in deeps with that? Like what chemicals, what toxins are being used that we don't see in the back room?
So since we were just talking about eating at home more and eating out less, another toxin we don't really see, most people are aware, is pesticides.
Holy shit.
I was pretty shocked when I saw...
I'm fasting the rest of the day.
When I saw...
I'm just kidding.
...how much pesticides being used in our crops, on the crops. Mm. So if you look at... So USDA actually keeps the pesticides use database. So you can see how much is being sprayed.
Yeah, but the USDA is truly not regulating much. Okay.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot more they can do, both the EPA and the USDA. But at least there's some data there. But I was just really shocked that when you look at some of these pesticides data, it's calculated in trillion tons. So it's really crazy how much is being sprayed. Like the numbers, like I felt like I had trouble grasping how much is being sprayed.
Over how many acres would you say?
Well, we don't have that much farmland, right? Like, okay, just California, like Central Valley, it's being sprayed a ton. And it was just shocking to me how much is being sprayed.
And it travels in the air.
It travels in the air. So if you actually, yes, it goes into water. So if you actually live near a farm field, that's actually pretty important to say, have a water filter, or don't wear your shoes that you wear from outside, and don't wear it at home, because you can bring these dust and these chemicals in. And there's actually studies, specifically studying Central Valley farm workers. So they have shown that, say, if the father goes out and spray, and then when he comes home, if he doesn't change, if he doesn't take off his clothes, and then he immediately brings all the exposure back at home, and then the kids get exposed. So it's actually a really effective intervention strategies that change your clothes before you're getting the home, if you, you know, live farmland or actually is a farm worker.
Dude, I'm going to be like, well, I have an electric car, but like going to the gas station, like I even just putting my shoes on that like area, you know, like you like see the cement, you're like, oh my gosh, you're like, oh, and like all those fumes getting on me. And then you're like, want to sit on the couch? Okay, don't get me started.
Again, you can only do so much, right? So we don't want people to be stressed out,
yes,
but it's a good practice when you come home,
yes,
take your shoes off, because your shoes naturally, you know, you step on things, and then that you just bring in home.
Have your house slippers or your socks by the door.
Exactly.
Get over it. Have another pair by the back door. So go take the dogs out in the backyard. Get over it. Just do it. Oh my gosh. So restaurants and eating at home more, so you can have more control. I kind of want to ask you going into that about seed oils, the talk about seed oils. What do you think about that?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know enough about seed oil to really comment on it. But I have read a little bit about seed oils, and then which was also really fascinating, that seed oil, the only reason we're consuming seed oil is because we had a lot of excess, I think, in the past. During the process of making these seed oils. Like, I think a cotton seed oil was the first one that was introduced into the food supply. But it's not great for human consumption.
No.
But I don't know enough to actually comment on it.
Okay, that's fair. Totally fair. I know my top that I like to use, but... and then with cooking more at home, what would you recommend for, like, if you made a sheet tray full of vegetables every single night? What would be something that you would, you know, bake on? Is aluminum okay? Like, what do you use?
Interesting. So I would recommend people to use stainless steel or cast iron for all your cooking material. Ceramic is good too. My only issue with ceramic, you know, say pans and pots and pans, is sometimes they don't last as long. It's just that ceramic coating. And then you use it for 2 years, and then the nonstick coating worn out, or you scratch it, and then you just throw it away. So that becomes an environmental issue. Like, basically, it just ends up in the landfill, versus a stainless steel pots and pans or cast iron, it lasts way longer.
Got you. I know, because there's so many different takes on that, like the whole product, what to bake on, what to cook with. I've heard, you know, stainless steel, and then I've heard like titanium, and I've heard, you know, all sorts of things. And so I know what I use personally, but you have to, you know, give yourself a little bit of grace and just know, I think in the end, like what temperature also you're cooking on, if you're burning it to the bits, you know, that's another case. And also, what are you cleaning it with in the end, you know? Cool. So we had those five things. So with your extensive background in environmental and health sciences, what are some particular practical steps that individuals can take to create, when we talk more about the home, a healthier home environment, particularly with household toxins?
Yeah, home is a tricky one. I would suggest people to start with the kitchen. You know, we kind of talked about it, water filter, like beeswax wrap, and then also your cookware, right? We kind of talked about it. But other things, start with the kitchen. Also, like, you know, use glass Tupperware, because these are things coming directly in contact with your food. And also bring your own shopping bag when you go shop. And also store your food, say, in an organic cotton muslin bag or something to store your food instead of like plastic. or use a silicone bag. So, I mean, there's a lot of strategies in a kitchen you could do. But say in your living room, you could have other big ticket items, right? Like sofa, for example, your floor, for example, carpets. There could be flame retardants and all these being using, and also your paint. I mean, yes. There's like a lot. And then I think for these bigger ticket item, people need to really plan ahead, because it's expensive.
It's expensive.
So think ahead, or, you know, especially if you're thinking about remodeling, think through what type of floor. Like, for example, we never would recommend vinyl floor or even laminated, because that's pretty much either PVC or it's plastic. So choose like hardwood floor, bamboo, or engineering wood. Mm. Those are generally a little bit better. Same as paint. So you want to make sure you don't have the VOCs in your paint or lead in your paint. Those are big ones. And flame retardant in mattresses or in sofa. That's something to think about.
Just kind of throwing my life out there. Something that I've done to reduce household toxins, especially like when I got with my husband, like, I moved in, we're in a rental house right now, and my dream is to, you know, have our edible garden and me build a non-toxic home, and I have all the plans, right? But something that I, and you guys can do this too, but if you don't have the capacity to break down the walls and go to the insulation and everything, you can do the little things, right, mm-hmm. that you see so often. Repaint the walls. I've done that. I repainted them with a toxic-free paint company. And it's so interesting because when it was going on, you couldn't even smell the paint in the house, which is so beautiful. I think just dusting and mm-hmm. cleaning. Mm-hmm. Like, dust does a huge amount yep. with toxins in the air and molds that form. But plant-based products, right? Really, no. You can make your own, too. I know a lot of people don't like vinegars.
Vinegar and baking soda. It's yeah. cheap. It's effective.
Yeah. Vinegar and baking soda. There you have it, folks. The cookware we talked about. We've started doing, we do refillable water bottles. Mm-hmm. Just fill it up from the filter, put it in the fridge. Kids grab them. Great. Wash them. Do it again. Mm-hmm. Glass storage containers. We've done that. Windows open as much as possible. We're so lucky to have fresh, clean air where mm-hmm. we live. Air purifiers. I have those in every room. And non-toxic mattresses. I have replaced all the mattresses in the home with eco non-toxic mattresses, as well as bed linens. We got a new, this is so extreme, guys, I know, but a new sofa that is, you know, made of like clean linen, sustainable linen. So there's no off-gassing. And as I mentioned before, non-toxic paint on the walls. And we have a shoe station at the door. So
that's great.
I think we're doing, we got a new cookware. Yeah. Okay. I think we're doing okay.
No, you're doing totally
okay.
We're
doing our best.
You're doing like more than enough. I think for, it's also good to be conscious that maybe for many people who don't have the means to do all these.
Right.
Then it's always good to start small, and then based on what you can afford and what you have your ability to do so, and then just start small.
Start with the thing that you most use the often.
Exactly.
Right?
And also it's like every little bit counts, because all of these things accumulates. So, and also you are exposed to multiple things at the same time. There are things you can control. There are things you cannot control, but they all contribute to your body burden of these toxins. So you want to make sure you can reduce as much as possible.
Reduce as much as possible. Even when eating out too, right? Mm-hmm. Always just choose glass.
And also, like, you know, oftentimes when we eat out, there's always leftover. So I keep like two glass containers just in my trunk. So if I have leftover, I just go to my car and I grab my own containers and I put it in my container.
Oh my God, I'm totally going to do that. Actually, I saw someone at the farmer's market do that. And it brought me to that idea. And they just brought their own Tupperware mm-hmm. to the farmer's market to put their berries in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's brilliant. I just need to keep doing that, right? So we talked about pregnancy a little bit before the show started off, because you're going through your own journey. And, you know, I feel like every woman I see right now is pregnant. All my workout classes, everyone's pregnant. And so for the couples or women especially, you know, that have that dream, they want to get pregnant and they need to start planning, but may be struggling. They may be having a struggle with their body or, you know, their hormones or what have you. What are some things that they can do to remove toxins in their household or specifically not even household, just in their lives? You mentioned some chemicals, but is there anything that really kind of stands out?
I think basically just the five strategies we just talked about, avoid plastics and fragrance, eat out less, water filter. I mean, if women can do these already, that's already removing a ton of toxins in their life already. And those are really important.
So what if they're, you know, with us, you know, a partner, you know, male partner.
Who's not willing to do it?
Who's not willing to do that?
Okay, that's a hard one, but I think
that causes for therapy.
You could definitely do that, but I think like a lot of women, so women actually makes about 80% of the health and purchase decisions at home. Like my husband was not aware of these, and I just like, okay, time to throw those things out. And then you just swap it.
Yeah.
But it might take a little bit of time, and people have different preferences. So it might take them a little time to kind of get used to the new products, for example. But I think I believe in the power of ladies. So I'm pretty sure ladies can do it.
We hear you. Yeah. And that's beautiful. Thank you. But could you discuss the importance of avoiding, we already talked about plastic in their daily lives, but stressing on that more, how could you really dive in deeper with the microplastics, right? Their potential health effects. There are no health effects.
Microplastic is really interesting. And I think people probably have seen in the news, you know, microplastics being found in deep lungs, it's found in brain.
Deep lungs.
Yep. And it's found in blood and it's found in all kinds of tissues. And microplastic is small. So microplastic is something less than like 5 millimeters. So it's pretty small, but you can still see it. But now we even have nanoplastic, which is even smaller, that sometimes you can't even see it.
Where do they come from?
So where does it come from? Most of the time it's basically formed by, okay, if you think about a plastic bottle and plastic trash, that's in the ocean, right? Like we've seen these like Pacific garbage patch. It's literally like an island of plastic trash. It's floating in the ocean. But if you think about this, a bottle, a piece of plastic that's in the ocean or in the environment, like floating around, hitting by water and these, and then they just become smaller and smaller. They basically become so small and that just become microplastic. And what's potentially really harmful with microplastic is that it attracts bacteria. It also has the fundamental composition of these toxins that we just talked about. These toxic chemicals that making plastic, and then it just got smaller. And what got it smaller, the problematic issue is that it travels everywhere because it's so small. It's even in the air, and then breathe it and it gets into your body. And then it's the same thing as exposing yourself to these toxic chemicals because it's so small and by composition. Basically, when you're ingesting microplastic or when microplastic is in you, you're basically getting exposed to these toxins, these hormone disruptors that we just talked about.
So
that's why it's like scary.
But how do you, like if it's everywhere that we can't see it, how do you minimize your exposure? Like how truly without?
You can't.
So
which,
how do you help heal yourself?
Yeah, which is like, it sounds a little bit doom and gloom. But I think this is where it's sort of like how fear could promote people have better lifestyle. So if you cannot control your exposure to, say, microplastic in the air, for example, you can't control that. You better control whatever else you can control to minimize your other exposure. Otherwise, you will have that exposure that you can't control and you have your other exposure that you don't even pay attention of. Then you just get these compounded exposure, right? So
right.
It's just worse.
Everything builds up.
Yeah, everything builds up. You don't know. I think when people don't understand why they need to care about this exposure is that you don't really die from this exposure tomorrow, right? You don't really feel anything. I don't feel fundamentally like how my body is different. Like if I reduce my exposure today. Right. But you don't really know like 10 or 20 years from today how you're going to feel.
Yeah.
And you basically don't know when your cup's going to get full, basically.
Yeah.
Until you're sick.
Yeah,
and then I think another thing is like people don't think about is when you're sick, it's not just you like feeling miserable. Like you're making everybody else around you miserable as well, because you're going to have a family member take care of you. You can't really enjoy the time with them. So it's not even just about yourself. It's about the quality of life for you and everyone around you.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to like by reducing exposure, you are actually investing in your health and investing in your happiness and also your friends and family's happiness, basically.
It's basically like your health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Eating well, doing well, what you pay for with your dollar really goes out there, right? Further than you think.
I also think it's really important that, you know, by doing these things, so you're also doing good for the environment. So, you know, you're talking about the pregnant mothers, like, okay, if you have a kid, you don't want your kid to live in a horrible environment. You don't want your kid to live in a toxic environment, but it has to start from you, not polluting that environment, right, for your kids.
Right. It starts from you, remember? Leading by example. So you were so beautifully wrote a publication, and it's very lengthy, but it's called Identifying People Based on Machine Learning Classification of Foods Consumed in Order to Offer Tailored Healthier Food Options. Okay, we're going to ask a quick question about that one, because it really delves into using machine learning to identify individuals based on their food consumption habits, correct? So what were some of the habits, and what were some of the alarming habits that you discovered?
So that was a collaboration with my advisor and then some of his students. I did not do all the major work. I was advising because I think I was the only dietitian on the paper. So we were looking at what are the people's habits. I think what was really interesting come out of it is that the database that we use is called What You Eat in America. So it's like a nationwide database. And we basically found some really interesting food patterns. Like, for example, like something is already known, like fast food, for example. Fast food does contribute to worse lifestyle and a worse health outcome.
And that was a pretty high number that people were consuming fast food all the time.
I think pizza is like one of the highest, like, consumption.
My husband's gonna die.
Consumption item. I'm not saying like pizza is not good, but you can make it good, but depending on how that pizza is being made, what's on that pizza, right? Like that could make a huge difference.
The quality of ingredients.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. And then could you share more about the potential implications of that research for offering healthier food options and fostering like better informed dietary options?
I think from that research, what was also really interesting is individuals are really different.
True.
So a diet plan that works for you might not work for me.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as, you know, the exposures. If you and I have the same exposure, but because we have different genetic makeup and then we have different physiology, I would respond very differently from you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like another sort of conclusion from that study is that we really need tailored approach, like a really individualized approach when it comes to diet and lifestyle for each individual. So what works for you doesn't mean it works for me.
I know. We were just talking about eating out. I'm like around here, like, you know, visiting, and I'm in San Francisco, and you're like, well, what do you like? And I was like, well, I like this, this, this. And you're like, well, I mean, we obviously like different things, right? Different strokes for different folks. But it goes back to your markers. You have to know how your body runs, what it requires, right? It's kind of like skincare. You truly don't recommend the same skincare for every person. Everyone has different skin types, right?
Yeah. This is a bit unrelated to, you know, a bit of what we talked about today. And I think this whole personalized approach when it comes to food and nutrition, one of the most useful tools I have ever used is a continuous glucose monitor.
Really?
I highly recommend everyone who has not used it to try it out. I think now you can get it over the counter, or you can try to convince your doctor to prescribe you one.
Does it hurt?
It doesn't hurt.
Okay.
You know, you can put it in belly or put it on your arm.
Awesome.
But I think what was really interesting is you can really see how you're responding to different food when it comes to your sugar. Because for your sugar, you want you don't want a lot of blips, and you want to maintain a pretty leveled sugar level. And then also making sure your insulin obviously is working, not having huge spikes. When I use it, even though I studied nutrition, and I kind of knew the common things, right? Okay, when I eat a lot of carbs, my sugar would go up. But I didn't realize how high my sugar could go up, like how I would blip. And even on like a common healthy food, like for example, sweet potato.
Mm.
When I was using it, I kind of realized I respond to different type of sweet potato. Like a regular sweet potato, the orange one, completely spikes my blood sugar, but the purple yam doesn't spike my sugar, which was like a really interesting. And also for noodles, like I'm Asian, I love eating noodles.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought soba, for example, soba is supposed to have way higher fiber content than other type of noodles. But they did the same thing to me. Like my sugar would spike exactly the same, even if I have higher fiber content noodles versus like regular noodles. But for you, it could be really different.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, no, I think I could completely agree with that one. I think I'd be interested in trying that. I wonder if my husband would kind of go in with me. I tried to track it. My doctor actually one time when we were doing a glucose fasting test, he said, absolutely, you cannot have honey because it's like cocaine for you. Like it literally, there's like spikes your sugar super high. He's like, you can only have like berries.
Interesting.
Like interesting. So no more melons for me, no more all that fun stuff. But yeah, no, I mean, I know definitely the way that I've changed my lifestyle over time, you know, becoming and adopting a toxic free lifestyle. So many things have changed. Like my brain, my outlook on life, you know, skin, eye, sleep, just consciousness of life. So it can really go a long way. But I think people need to really realize is that we live in such an instant gratification world, you know, and they get overwhelmed and they're like, well, I can't see 30 years down the road. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to keep doing the things I'm doing. You know, how do I know if it's going to work? But it's like a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a slow, beautiful burn.
I also think, I mean, you just mentioned that your sleep, your skincare, your nutrition and everything, right? So we also want people, once they start this like a low tox journey, if you want to detox, you also need other body parts to support your newly low tox system, right? So even if you live a healthy lifestyle, even if you live a low tox lifestyle, you use, say, good products. If you don't get enough sleep and you still eat horribly, that's not going to help.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to have other like healthy lifestyle to support your low tox lifestyle, vice versa.
Yeah. It's not just about the products, but it's about the habits.
Yes. And right? It's also your mental health, right? If you're stressed out all the time, that doesn't help.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I want to dive in about how toxins and mental health, right? Toxins and mental health, you know, the science behind that. I think even I'm going to focus on teenagers first, because since the pandemic, you know, kids were stuck at home. They became a little bit more depressed. They may have been like soothing with other things. We talked about energy drinks, right? How does that affect mental health in the long run?
I think there's not a ton of research linking these environmental toxins to mental health, but there have been some research. So it's up to debate, but I think it also have some linkage to addictive behavior, right? Like you just mentioned that, you know, when you are not in a really good mental state, you make bad decisions. And that could be one of the issues that people could be selecting these products, for example, or they could be eating horrible food, which also contains toxins. And And then this also, I mean, this you can also broaden the term or what you would call a toxin, right? So when you're in like a bad mental state, you could be like eating high sugary and high calorie stuff, and that can become toxins to you. So when you're not in a good mental state, you could be making bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. There's a really great book that I'm reading, actually might like it. It's called Eat and Flourish.
I have not. I love the name.
It's so amazing. It's about our relationship with just food in general and the way it's prepared, the ingredients that are used, how it makes us feel, how we should consume it, you know, eating with groups versus not eating with groups. I mean, there's pluses and minuses to everything, but it really does talk about the choices that we make. Mm-hmm. And it goes down to like, if you start to spiral, like you're probably going to start making worse choices and talking badly about you. And then in life, making poor motivational choices, right? Yeah.
I mean, there's already a ton of research like sugar and salt. They're like addictive.
What do you know more about sugar?
Okay, sugar can be addictive. So basically your taste buds can change every 3 weeks. So if you keep eating high sugary food and a high calorie food, your taste buds basically adapt to that. And then you only think that's delicious. So if you actually put people off of like high sugary diet and then for like 3 weeks, and then when you put them back on that, if you feed them healthy food, and then when you like after that, and then you put them back on like high sugary food, they would think this is like disgusting and it doesn't taste good.
It's too salty, too sugary.
Right. So it's also similar as, you know, if you go fragrance free for a while and then you get exposed to this high, you know, fragrance product, and you will feel like nauseating, right? You would feel uncomfortable. That's because the process of adapting this. Like for high sugary food, right? People get addicted to it. And then if they don't change that, then it becomes this vicious cycle.
Vicious cycle. I will have to have a whole episode just on sugar and the effects on the body and like, you know, the different names for it and what it actually does to their body. I know that's kind of not your wheelhouse, but, you know, we can always have you back on to talk about it. Or if you know someone, send them my way for sure. But given your expertise and all of your research that you've done, could you recommend some toxic-free brands and products that individuals can certainly incorporate into their daily lives to, you know, start the reduction of overall toxin exposure?
One of my favorite brand is called Badgers. I think it's very affordable.
Love Badgers.
I think one of the issues when we are trying to tell people to live a healthy lifestyle, low-tox lifestyle, one of the biggest barriers that people have told us is it's expensive. It is expensive. So, and I think Badger is, compared to many other more boutique and more expensive brands, it's much more affordable. So that has always been my first recommendation to folks.
Badger is mostly like personal care.
Yeah, personal care.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, I think people also need to realize that they don't need that many products.
You don't.
you know, like, for example, your hair products, like people use skincare, hair products a lot. Now, before I even use shampoo, now I don't even use shampoo and conditioner. I just use a shampoo bar instead of like, you know, liquid shampoo, because then that reduces a lot of environmental footprint. And it's also just easy to carry when you go travel. It's really easy. So I think reducing the amount of products that you use is also a really great way to reduce your exposures.
That's beautiful. I love that. Do you have any other brands?
I think there are many brands. There is a brand I'm actually on their advisory board. It's called Hue and Grace. And then Ben and Sarah, they had fertility issues, and then they were blessed with two kids also through surrogacy. And then they wanted to use this opportunity to pay back to people who helped them is by developing hormone safe product.
Oh, cool.
So that was pretty cool. Another brand is Branch Basics.
I love Branch Basics.
Yeah. So it's simple. Which so simple. You use one cleaner that it covers laundry, it covers everything. Again, reducing. So that's another good one. But I also want to caution people, many times even though a brand is a good brand could also carry different type of products. And oftentimes it doesn't mean every product is clean, is safe. So it's always, that's why this goes back to reading that ingredient label, right? And recognizing and go fragrance free.
Well, and if you have any doubt, can I throw this in there? Because I've noticed that. And you can go to environmentalworkinggroup.org, EWG.org, and you can look up that particular product name, and they will give you a breakdown of the things that in there and a rating, A, B, C, D, E, F score. So that'll help you out too, because how are you supposed to know all the ingredients and what they mean?
Yeah. EWG is a really, really great resource. And then they are like a pioneer in this field. So people can definitely look it up on their website, Skin Deep website, as well as their Healthy Living app. There's another app people can also check it out. It's called Clearya, C-L-E-A-R-Y-A. So that one, they even have a browser extension. So when you shop on Amazon or Walmart or Sephora, Target, you can have that plug in and automatically help you screen that and give you a rating. That one is actually color coding different ingredients based on their risk level. So you can also check that out. There's another one called Think Dirty.
Yes.
People can also check it out. And then now EWG has EWG verified. There's also a Made Safe verification certification you can look for. But also pay attention on all of these certifications. They're certified by ingredient screening. That means somebody has verified the label of the product. None of these certifications actually test the actual product. So this is where, like, you know, I caution people about, for example, essential oils. Because you don't really know, like, what goes into it. Some of the product has been certified, but if they actually have contamination in that essential oil, then this product is still not safe. So even with certification, I think that's an easy way. Having the certification is better than not having the certification, but I still want people to pay attention, make judgment, and read that label just to double check.
I'm seriously, my mind is like blown right now. This is so amazing. I know everyone's going to just love this information coming at you. So here we are at the end. I have some rapid fire questions for you.
Okay,
are you ready?
Go for it.
Jenna, what do you do basically every single morning? What is your morning routine?
My morning routine, if it's not raining, I go for a quick run, 20 minutes run, just to get me started of the day. That's usually I do. Then I have my coffee, wake me up. Then I started with my emails and meetings, and I go about my day.
You go about your day. I have a question though, because I know you work very hard. Do you sit more than you stand?
Oh yes, it's horrible.
Oh my gosh, you got to get a stability ball and just bounce around.
Yes, I need to do that. I attempted to use a standing desk, but what I realized is that I overdid it. So standing desk, you can't stand for too long, and then you cannot sit for too long. Unfortunately, that's an aging problem, which is a whole other different topic. But I think moving is definitely better than not moving.
Right.
There's actually research showing even if you're a weekend warrior, that you only exercise during the weekend, that's still better than not exercising.
Oh.
So it's always good.
And what is your everyday non-negotiable?
Yoga class in the afternoon.
Oh, you'll have to tell me some beautiful yoga to go
to. That's that keeps my sanity in check.
Yeah. Do you stay for the whole time, the Shavasana too?
Yes.
Atta girl. That's something that, like, you know, with my stress sometimes like hit out because I can't do it, but that's the time that I need it the most. And then what is one toxic free habit that is easy for everyone to start doing today?
Fragrance free.
Fragrance free, not unscented, fragrance free.
Yes, I think once you go fragrance-free, not only mean you avoid phthalates, you actually, a lot of these toxic chemicals actually occurs together. They get formulated together. So even if you just go fragrance-free, you're already eliminating so many chemicals already. So just go fragrance-free.
Love
every time you shop, fragrance-free.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me at such beautiful place.
And back to Million Marker, because I know I'm coming back around. Okay. Where can everyone find you? Where can they get tested? And what is basically your elevator pitch for Million Marker?
Million Marker is a company allow you to understand your toxic chemical exposures and help you make that move to live a healthier lifestyle. We gave tailored recommendations for how to reduce your exposures. People can find us on our website, www.millionmarker.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram, million_marker, or Twitter.
Nice.
As I mentioned, we do a lot of science translation, and then we promote healthy lifestyle behaviors, not just on low toxic living, but also everything around wellness. That's why we had you on Instagram Live, and we have other guests to talk about mental health, to talk about gut health, to talk about nutrition, to talk about physical activity, and many other areas contributes to wellness.
Are we able to give a discount on the testing for Toxic Free with KB listeners?
Yes, we can do a $15 off. We're hoping we have better discount in the future. Hopefully one day we'll have our own lab to reduce the testing cost.
Fantastic. It'll happen. So guys, we'll do $15 off being a Toxic Free with KB listener, viewer. We will put the code in the show notes. And also, if you guys are interested in that, follow Million Marker on Instagram and follow at toxicfree.kb on Instagram. And certainly comment in your favorite part about the episode, and we'll stay connected. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
Wow. Okay. So I'm literally that emoticon right now that's like, my head just exploded. I have such a wealth of information that is absorbed into my body from that episode. And I know you guys did too. But guys, we still have got time for some hot habits. So my hot habit for today is dry brushing. I mean, I know a lot of you guys have probably heard about, you know, just lightly or sometimes aggressively, people have been brushing their skin. It helps stimulate the lymph system. Many of you guys have asked me about my Raynaud's, and it's basically poor circulation of my blood flow. So my fingers get cold, my toes get cold. And so this just helps with the circulation throughout that, amongst detoxing all of my system. You know when you guys get sick and you're like, I think my lymphs are swollen, I think I'm getting a cold, right? So when we have stagnant energy within us, when we have buildup of toxins, it helps to keep the lymphs moving, right? The lymphs are your natural detoxification system. So this is just such a simple tool that helps keep everything in motion so you can expel it out in the end, right? And our trendy trend, oh my gosh, guys, I can't even believe I'm reading this, but diagnosing yourself on TikTok. Yeah, TikTok. It's kind of a problem because people are starting to believe what they see more and more. And they're not believing what they see for high-produced, well-backed, well-researched videos. An example, a video about ADHD, it got 2 billion views, right? The hashtag borderline personality disorder, 190 million. And hashtag autism, 15 billion views. So what's the problem with this? Well, mental health professionals really say that there's a lot of misinformation that is being spread, a lot of misinformation. And when you start to see this misinformation, you are definitely probably going to misdiagnose yourself. It sets you up for extreme disaster. So my thought on this is, don't believe everything that you see on that aspect. Do not believe everything that you hear that is not well-researched, that is not truly science-backed, that is not just celeb-endorsed. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. I'll see you next time. Remember, follow along on Instagram at toxicfree.kb. And remember, when you start to feel overwhelmed, you're doing your best, and your best is great.